not what I ordered. I'm saying tell them that. A pause. Fine. I'll be home in a minute. He hung up, looking stressed, then glanced at me again. We should go, he said. The crises keep multiplying. Yeah, let's do it, I told him. Moment passed. I was safe, I told myself. But why was I also sad? He started down the aisle then, toward the register, and I followed, dropping a few rolls of the crepe paper in the basket as I went. Even as we paid and left, though, heading back to the chaos, I kept thinking back to that moment on the edge of what had been and what could be, when the world had opened up, unfolding a potential that both dazzled and terrified me. Wow, Jilly whispered to me as we stood together at the back of the crowd. Those tablecloths look great with the crepe paper. Did you do that? I glanced over at the nearest table, lined with two mason jars of sunflowers and a blue glass votive, the candle flickering warmly inside. I helped, but this was really Ambrose's thing. Impressive, she said. The student becomes the master. What? It's a martial arts movie thing, she explained, smiling at Michael Salem, who was standing beside her in a button-down and shorts, holding her hand. His favorite. To this, I only nodded, as the groom and Andrew, his friend who was officiating, took their places under the big tree at the end of our makeshift aisle. Roger was in a suit that looked like it was hot and uncomfortable. I hadn't made it to the wish wall yet, but if I had, I would have considered, for him, breathable fabric. Andrew in khaki pants, sandals, and a flowing white shirt. Off to the side, in William's typical spot, was Ambrose, who then signaled to Leo to start the music. When he caught my eye, I looked away. I was still processing what had happened, or not, at the dollar store. We hadn't talked again, as the entire ride home, Ambrose had been putting out fires involving both the beer snafu and a blown breaker due to Leo's guitar amp. Then, as soon as we'd arrived, Lauren was waiting in the driveway, arms crossed, clearly unhappy and ready for a discussion. I'd slipped inside to help with the keg and everything else, but had to assume whatever had followed had not gone well, as I'd gotten a text from him soon after that said only, "Congrats, you win." Now, as the song on Leo's phone, attached to a speaker, began, everyone turned to the porch, where Maya stood with her mom. She was a gorgeous bride, in a plain white sheath and her grandmother's gold cross on a thin necklace, her something old and borrowed. The new was her flower crown, made herself. The blue, the beads on her white sandals, was visible with each step she took as she started down the stairs. She smiled at me as she passed, and I nodded, then bent down to adjust a bit of her hem that was doubled over, catching on the grass. A tiny detail, but one people would notice. And if you could fix something, why wouldn't you? I still feel weird we're here, Jilly said in my ear as Maya and Roger turned to face each other. We don't even know these people. You saved everyone from eating nothing but pizza, I told her again. You've earned an invite. That had been another wrinkle. Ambrose's list for the friends who'd gone grocery shopping had requested pizzas on the front, with frozen egg rolls and meatballs and other finger food continued on the back. When they didn't turn it over and then did their own strange math about how many they'd need, we ended up with 40 frozen pies and nothing else. Luckily, Jilly and Michael Salem hadn't left her house yet, and between their two trucks were able to produce enough grilled cheese and ham and chicken biscuits on the fly to nicely round out the menu. It had taken only a quick canvas of the early arriving guests to find a couple of people happy to preheat the oven and arrange things on cookie sheets, all of which were now warming up as Maya and Roger said their vows. Then all we had to do was plop them on trays and we'd be good. Now I watched as the bride and groom took each other's hands, their very short ceremony already speeding toward its pinnacle and conclusion. When they began their vows, I looked up at the twinkling lights in the trees as a breeze blew across the yard and all of us assembled. Then I looked up at Ambrose again, his face in profile, watching as Maya slid a ring on Roger's finger. What had he meant that it was good to know I wanted him to be happy? I wanted to think about it, and yet didn't at the same time. Moments later, the bride and groom came back down the aisle, Roger flushed and actually smiling, Maya waving her bouquet over her head. As everyone cheered, throwing the flower petals we'd collected from pruning Bee's older roses, my phone buzzed. I pulled it out. Ben.
Off at 8. Dinner?
I glanced up at Ambrose, who was talking to Andrew, shaking his hand. Leo was starting the playlist that was his gift to the bride and groom. I'd looked at it earlier when he'd been taking a smoke break. It was mostly slow, folky music mixed with the occasional rap song, not exactly ideal for dancing.
Not that I was going to say anything. At that point, I'd planned to be long gone by the time the party really got going, yet somehow I was still here. And now, I realized, I wanted to stay.
Kind of got caught up, I wrote back. Tomorrow? Then I slid it back in my pocket, not waiting for a response. A half hour later, 3 of the 6 tablecloths were ripped, we were out of grilled cheese squares, and Leo had been overthrown as DJ by a group of people demanding danceable music. Michael Salem had started up the gravy truck to produce some more biscuits, while Jilly and I took our turn at the wish wall, which had been set up just by the backyard gate. As I straightened the box of cards and replaced the pens in their holder, I wondered if I'd ever attend any wedding without lapsing into organizer mode. Probably not.
So what's the idea here again? Jilly asked.
You write a wish for the bride and groom, I told her.
What if you don't know them at all?
Then you write what you would want someone to wish for you at your wedding, I said. Peace, friendship, never fighting over who washes the dishes, that kind of thing.
I love washing dishes, though, she said, considering her card. Maybe I'll just wish for lots of good food. That's what my parents say is key to their marriage.
You can go a long way on grilled cheese sandwiches, I guess. Or they can.
She bent over the table and began to write.
What are you going to say?
I wasn't actually sure at that moment. As I thought, I glanced around the yard again, taking in the crowd of people dancing by that big tree, the white tables lined with candles, one guest's baby toddling over to Ira, who had a white, bejeweled bandana tied around his neck for the occasion. I didn't realize I'd been actually looking for something, or someone, specific, until I spotted Ambrose, standing at the back of the gravy truck, talking to Michael Salem. He was in the middle of saying something, using his hands to make a point, and I watched him for a minute, surprising myself again with how much I wanted him to see me as well. When he did, and broke into a grin, I felt my face flush.
"I don't think you can wish that for the bride and groom," Jilly said.
"Maybe for you, though."
I looked at her.
"What are you talking about?"
She rolled her eyes.
"Oh, please, Luna. You and Ambrose have so much chemistry, you're basically flammable."
"Jilly," I said, my voice low. "He could not be more on the rebound."
"Which means you won the bet, and so can pick yourself for him to go out with next,"
she replied, folding her card and sticking it on the wall.
"It's perfect. You can act like you can't stand him all you want, but that blush doesn't lie."
"It's not like that," I said,
although if asked, I wasn't sure I could say what it was like, actually. I opened my card. And I never planned to pick me.
Plans change, she said. You know that better than anyone.
She was right. But so was I. Even driving back with the tables earlier, I'd had no idea I might be where I was now, on the edge of something with the last person I'd ever expect. You would think I'd have learned that the world is full of surprises, though, and maybe not just the kind that break your heart. I put my pen to the paper and began to write. I'd made so many wishes for so many couples quietly in my head as they drove away, but writing the words out made it seem more real, possible, for them and maybe for me. For you, I wish for second chances. I folded it shut, then put it on the wall before I could change my mind, right above Jilly's. As Michael Salem called out to her and she started his way, I crossed the backyard, moving toward the music. When I looked back at the wish wall from a distance, it was a sea of squares. I couldn't even find mine among them. So many things we ask for, hope for, prayers put out into a world so wide. There was no way they could all be answered. But you had to keep asking. If you didn't, nothing even had a chance of coming true. On the dance floor, Roger and Maya were in the center, holding hands, him even sweatier, her flower crown lopsided. Andrew, his white shirt also damp, bopped beside them, along with Maya's mom and some other friends, all in a circle. Behind them, B was twirling in the arms of the contractor neighbor, while Lauren boogied with Kevin Yu, B's med student groom-to-be. Yet again, I found myself on the outside of all this, a line only I could see dividing us. This time, though, there was no rule. I could cross over it. Isn't that the way everything begins? A night, a love, a once and for all? When I saw Ambrose coming toward me from the other side of the floor, the moment seemed even more fated, like my wish had come true. All this time, I'd been waiting for my second chance. Maybe he'd been here all along. "Hey," I said to him, holding out my hand. "Dancing is healing. Want to heal?"
"Yeah. Sure, of course," he said quickly, but didn't move. "It's about time, right?"
I cocked my head to the side. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing,"
he said, equally fast, too fast. He flashed me a smile, compensating, then dropped it when he saw my own serious expression. Behind me, I could hear someone whooping. A girl in a black dress twirled past, her hem brushing my leg.
"I was just at the truck, talking with Jilly."
"Oh," I said, confused. "Okay." He looked over at B, doing a shimmy as Kevin clapped his hands.
"I told her how I feel about you, how I've felt."
This was big, I knew. Huge. But it didn't match what he was saying and how he was saying it, like a rhythm slightly off, the beat you somehow can't clap to. "And?" His face softened, and he stepped closer. Around us, the music was picking up, faster, people whooping it up.
"Why didn't you tell me?"
"About the shooting.
About Ethan."
Ethan. It was the last name I wanted to hear. It didn't belong in this place at this moment. All around me, people were happy, flushed and in motion, the way the world had been on that crisp fall morning not even a year ago. How stupid I was to think Ambrose and I could somehow be happy, too, after such a bumpy, uneven beginning. To really be happy, you needed epic, like Ethan, and we weren't that, not even close.
"Jilly told you?"
I said, my voice sounding light, like it was rising away from me.
She was looking out for you, he said. She's protective. I get it. What you went through?
Don't pity me, I said quickly, stepping back. Don't do that. I don't need it.
I'm not,
he replied, moving closer to close the gap between us.
I just feel like an idiot. All that stuff I said about breakups and you being cynical, you must have felt...
I don't feel anything, I said, cutting him off. It's fine.
Hey.
He reached out for my arm, but I shook him off, the response reflexive, immediate.
Look, I just wanted to say I'm sorry. I didn't know, and if I said stupid things, I'm just... sorry.
The music was changing now. The current song winding down, another, slower one coming in behind it. A perfect transition, and how common is that? I hated that I noticed. I'm sorry, too, I said, stepping back farther. And I should go, actually. I told Ben I'd meet him. He blinked at me.
You did?
Yeah, I said. I mean, I didn't know I'd won the bet yet, and I kind of like this dating thing. I can see why you're so into it.
I don't want to do it anymore, though, he said immediately. And I don't care about the bet. You're more than that. You always have been. That was just a way to win you.
I wished the music would stop. I wished everything would stop. But wishes don't mean anything. I'd been right about that all along. You don't want me, I told him. Nothing will ever be as good as what I had. I'll never be what I was.
Luna.
He tried to reach for my hand again. I pulled away.
Don't say that.
I have to go, I said, my voice breaking. I have somewhere to be. He looked at me for a second, and I wondered about all the other ways this might have gone, possibilities spinning out into the future. Not that it mattered.
Fine. Go, he said. But know this. I meant what I said to Jilly. How I feel about you? Nothing's changed for me.
That must be nice, I thought. Me, I could never count on anything without it shifting shape right before my eyes. Somehow, I was moving off the edge of the dance floor, across that line. Then I went farther, over the grass, through the gate, and out to my car. I'd always wondered about the people who leave weddings early, the impetus for not seeing the whole thing through to the end. Everyone has their reasons, as unique and varied as faces and thumbprints. You could speculate all you want and still never get close. But I felt sure that as I departed, alone, no one was watching me. Chapter 24. This was better. Of course it was.
Are you going to finish that?
Ben asked, nodding at the last of the donut on my plate. This was a running joke, testament both to his bottomless appetite and the fact we always ended up eating together. Almost 3 weeks of dating, and these things happen. It was all normal, exactly how it was supposed to go.
Go ahead,
I said, pushing it over to him. He grinned, then picked it up, taking a bite.
The day you deny me your leftovers, I'll know we're finished.
That's how you'll know? I asked. You'll miss every other sign?
Food is my language, he explained,
sipping his iced coffee.
That's the way it works with us stubborn types. We miss other normal cues.
Another inside thing between us. How we referred to his tenaciousness in asking me, and actually getting me, to go out with him. Already we had a story, our own folklore. That semester of Western Civ, just friends, followed by the Lynn wedding, and then multiple attempts to get together, all thwarted by his schedule or mine. Finally, he saw me driving home one night, pulled a U-turn, and followed me to the next intersection, where he texted me an invite for a slice of pizza. I went, we ate, then kissed, and the rest was Well, this. It was nice, the kind of story you wanted to tell. But I couldn't help but recognize the tiny cracks in our origin tale's foundation that only I could see. Like how on that night, I'd been coming from Maya and Roger's wedding, still reeling from everything Ambrose had said to me. The fact that when I got Ben's text at that light, I was typing back no before I realized he was right behind me. Small details, I knew, not really part of the outcome. And that was what mattered, anyway. The fact that we'd ended up together, over two slices, everything unfolding in a normal way. No instant dislike, dragging across parking lots, sealing of dogs, and other annoying behavior. Not a single weird bet or secret left unrevealed too long. If our relationship was a wedding, it would have been proceeding just fine, with no surprises or real problems. Unlike me and Ambrose and whatever we might have been, most assuredly a disaster. So yes, this was good. And I didn't have to worry about dating other people because I'd won the bet. Though it didn't feel like much of a victory. It didn't feel like anything.
You have foam on your nose, Ben said now, pulling his phone out of his pocket. It's super cute. Let's snap a pic.
I made myself smile as I settled in against him, focusing my gaze on the tiny circle on his phone that was the camera. Ben was big into documentation of us on his youme.com page and other social media sites. The first few times I'd scrolled through his feed and seen so much of my own face, it had been alarming, although now I thought it was cute. Most of the time, anyway.
Man, he said, sliding his phone back in his pocket as I checked my watch out of habit, even though I wasn't expected at work. That woman sure can't talk. Does she really think we need to hear about her lab results?
I followed his gaze over my shoulder where phone lady, at the next table, was indeed deep in conversation with someone about a recent scan and blood draw ordered by the doctor, and you know that's never good. I hadn't even heard her until now, which said something about my level of attention. She always does that, I told him. I think it's like therapy for her or something.
Sharing her most personal details with the coffee-buying public? I didn't say I understood it, I said. I'm just reporting the facts.
He smiled at me. 3 for 3 inside jokes in one meal. This one, he'd first said to me that night at the pizza place. That he knew we were both going off to school soon, and it was probably not a good time to get involved, but that he'd been thinking about me nonstop and had to take a shot anyway.
I'm not pressuring you, was his exact phrasing, but these are the facts.
Another tiny imperfection, how I had rephrased his words, but close enough. Which really would be the name I'd give our relationship, not that I could ever say it aloud. We weren't madly in love yet, but I liked him a lot. It wasn't exactly epic, but we had a story. Not totally perfect, but, well, close enough. And I hadn't expected that anyway, from him or any other guy, really. You only get so many sunset walks. As I thought this, Ben leaned forward, surprising me with a quick kiss. I jumped, startled. I was still adjusting to this aspect of him, a kind of dive-bomb affection that was cute, really. At the moment, I was quite aware of Leo, behind the nearby counter, who'd been shooting me looks ever since we'd arrived for breakfast a half hour earlier. Ben had ordered for us, sparing me direct contact, for which I had been grateful. As he headed for the bathroom, though, Leo made a beeline right for me.
I have to admit, he said in a dramatic way that made me suspect he'd planned what he was going to say ahead of time. I'm surprised.
I looked around the busy shop, other customers, pastry display, phone lady now talking about her difficulties with her mother. About what?
He nodded toward the men's room. You're here with someone who isn't Ambrose. Kind of weird, considering he dumped my best friend for you.
What? I said.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't,
he repeated in a high voice, mocking me.
What a jerk, I thought. Funny, because that's exactly what he told Lauren. Here she was, busy planning a wedding for her cousin and best friend, and you guys run off and hook up at the dollar store behind her back? Nice.
I didn't hook up with anyone at the dollar store, I said, as a man at the next table glanced over at me. When I glared at him, he quickly turned back around. And if Ambrose brought me into their breakup, that's all him. I had nothing to do with it. This was true. Sure, I'd thought for a second I had some feelings for Ambrose, but I'd been caught up in the moment, the wedding, not to mention spending basically all my time with him for the entire summer. Just as quickly, though, on the dance floor, I'd realized my mistake, come to my senses, and gotten out of there. If Ben and I had our origin story, this was the opposite, but it served the same purpose. The more I told it, the more I believed it. No cracks.
Everything okay?
Ben asked, returning to the table and putting his hands on the back of my chair. Yeah, I said, glancing at Leo. We were just catching up.
I gotta get back to work, he announced, as if I'd been the one tearing him away from his job. See you around, Luna.
I nodded, and then, thankfully, he was leaving, going back behind the counter.
Nice guy, Ben observed. I like the beard.
I smiled, turning around to look up at him. Don't get any ideas. In response, he leaned down, kissing the top of my head. Another sneak attack, but this time I didn't react. Progress, I thought, and had a flash of how we must look from the outside, a happy couple having breakfast and some mild PDA at the beginning of a late summer day. I wasn't sure what it meant that I did this often when it came to Ben and me, stepping outside of myself to consider us from a distance, like an observer rather than participant in the relationship.
Because you know you're going through the motions, a dark, quiet voice replied. The one I heard sometimes late at night when I couldn't sleep. To be honest, this was the same time I found myself missing Ambrose. His breaking of office supplies, melty croissants, and, maybe, kindness, in a way I couldn't explain. In broad daylight, though, it was easy to silence. I pushed out my chair, getting to my feet, and it was gone.
So you're off at 6? I asked Ben as we headed for the door, passing phone lady, who was still talking loudly, a bite of scone now in her mouth. He pushed the door open, holding it for me.
Yeah, then I've got some top-secret birthday stuff to do, but I'll see you around 8.
Ben, I said as he joined me outside, then took my hand, you don't have to do anything for my birthday.
Oh, right, he replied. Because that's exactly how you hold on to a wonderful girlfriend, ignoring her big day. I'm not that thick-headed, Barrett.
You're coming to the dinner, I told him. Seriously, that's all I want.
Too bad. You're getting more, he replied. I sighed. Don't get mad. Just reporting the facts.
Ha ha. The truth was, with everything that had been going on lately, this new relationship, plus getting ready to leave for school in a matter of weeks, my birthday, a little over a week away on July 22nd, kept slipping my mind. Normally, I could have also blamed event fatigue, as this was thick in the marriage season. But after Maya and Roger's event, not to mention the ones every summer of my life so far, I had decided to take a break from work to try to enjoy the time I had left at home wedding-free.
Well, I think it's a wonderful idea, my mother had said when I proposed this a couple of hours after her return from St. Samara, as we sat drinking iced tea on the back porch.
God knows you've earned some time off. After this vacation, I'm even more aware of how important things other than work are to your quality of life.
She's basically memorized John's book, William told me. It's like she's in a cult now.
Oh, stop it, my mom said. Then she blushed, slightly,
the same way I'd noticed she did every time John was mentioned in conversation, which was, well, constantly, usually by her. "Enjoy your summer, Luna. We'll be fine." "See, now I know you're in love," William told her, "because the old Natalie would immediately be freaking out that we have 4 weddings ahead and we'll be down our best employee."
"That's nice," I said to him, touched.
"Thanks." "Don't get too excited. There's only Ambrose to compare you to," he replied, taking a swig of his tea. He was still wearing the straw hat he'd bought for the trip, which he now tipped back on his head and said,
"What?"
I blinked.
"Sorry?"
"You just made a weird face."
"Did I?"
I picked up my own glass.
"Didn't mean to. Maybe I'm not used to compliments."
"Maybe," he said slowly as I took a sip. My mother, across the patio table, was looking at her phone, another new habit since the vacation. John had already texted 3 times since I'd picked them up, by my count.
"Well, I, for one, will miss you terribly, and am selfish enough to hope you get bored out of your mind and decide to rejoin us on the front lines. But I'm not in love."
"Yet," my mother said, eyes still on her screen.
"Yet?"
I asked. "Can you arrange a timeline for something like that?"
"No," she replied, putting the phone aside. "But you can set up a date with potential for it, which is what William agreed to do while we were away with his cheese friend."
"He's not my cheese friend," William said immediately, now he was blushing.
"And I made that promise after a night of champagne on an exotic island. I can't be held responsible."
"Nonsense," my mother said, waving her hand.
"It counts. And you'll reach out to him this week because John and I both saw you swear to it."
"John again," William said to me. "Get ready to hear that name a lot. I know I have. Next thing you know, he'll be moving in."
"Doesn't he live in St. Samara?" I asked.
"He has a house there for the necessary and all too rare act of recharging," my mother explained as William rolled his eyes again. "But he's based in Lakeview and spends most of his time traveling, giving lectures. It's a fluid lifestyle, allowing for adjustments as needed."
"This is what I meant when I said she memorized the book," William told me. "She speaks in bullet points and catchphrases now."
"It's very good," my mother said.
"In fact, John is having additional copies sent for both of you, along with the accompanying workbook. I think you'll really benefit from it."
"Luna is 17, Natalie," William said. "She doesn't need to worry about being a workaholic yet."
"The term is a work hole, and it's not just about that," she replied as her phone lit up again.
Immediately, she grabbed it. Eyes on the screen, she was nonetheless able to say,
"It's about the courage to go for what you want, not just what you think you need. Sometimes we don't even know what that is."
"Well, I need to get home," William replied, standing up, his hand on his hat.
"We've got that meeting at the office first thing tomorrow with Amber Dashwood about her 3-ring circus of a wedding."
"Circus?" I asked. "How did I miss this?"
"It's a recent development," my mother said. "Apparently, she decided a couple of weeks ago she wants a theme after all. So we're calling the tent a big top and hiring acrobats."
"Wow," I said, regretting for a second I'd decided to sit it out. "Sounds insane."
"She wanted exotic animals, too, but that's harder to pull together permit-wise,"
William said, collecting his bag.
"Also, liability. Maybe Ambrose can bring that dog of his and we'll pretend."
"He's not exactly ferocious," my mom said. "But what is she expecting on such short notice?"
I had a flash of Ira, his wiry snout and eyebrows, the way his tail thumped hard against whatever was nearby whenever Ambrose appeared. True love that was instant in the second he was rescued and we carried him away. As I thought this, I felt William looking at me again and wondered if my face had yet again changed. But this time, he said nothing.
It wasn't until later that night when he was gone and my mother had retired to her room with her already dog-eared and highlighted copy of Work Holes, How to Be the Person You Want to Be and Do the Job You Love, that I realized in the hours we'd spent together, I'd never even mentioned the news about my own love life and Ben. This didn't really mean anything. We'd talked mostly about their trip, with me leaning over their respective phones to look at pictures, William, scenery, food, and sunsets, my mother, herself in front of sunsets and scenery with John. And anyway, the next morning during Daybreak USA, when she brought up my birthday, I said right away I was seeing someone that I wanted invited to the dinner she was hosting. In the weeks following, after William worked up the nerve to invite Matt, his cheese friend, out for drinks, twice, and dinner, three times, he decided to bring him along as well. Now here we were, all of us paired off, planning to come together to celebrate, well, me. Things were surely different, but not totally. We were still doing it a day early, as a wedding rehearsal was booked for the actual date. As for me, with free days for the first time in recent memory, I'd been getting stuff for school, hanging out with Jilly and the kids, and trying to get used to not being at work, which was harder than I'd expected. The first couple of days felt totally decadent, sleeping in, eating bowls of cereal in front of marathons of big New York and Chicago, in my pajamas, then reading until dinner. Then I'd finally drag myself into the shower so I could meet Ben, either alone or with his friends, for dinner or to hit the various farewell parties that were already starting. After a week or so, though, I was finding it harder to keep busy. Maybe I was more of a work hole than I realized. When it came to Ben, though, everything was easy. We already knew each other enough that there were no real surprises. Word had gotten around school after the Brownwood shooting about my relationship with Ethan. He'd never mentioned it then, but the subject had come up a couple of times since we'd gotten together. That was part of our story, too, the events that came before, and just as easily been discussed before moving on. That was the difference, with a person you knew and one you didn't. I couldn't have kept that secret from Ben even if I wanted to. But these were thoughts that only came in the middle of the night, when I allowed myself to retrace that Saturday of Maya and Roger's wedding, going over each moment for clues of how, in some way, I could have done things differently. It wasn't like the way I'd savored my night with Ethan, everything perfect from start to finish. With this, I could see nothing but the places where I could or should have done something else, all the way up to that moment on the dance floor when everything had gotten to be too much and I'd chosen to run. What had I been thinking in that moment? Even now, as I replayed it, I wasn't sure. It was like Ethan suddenly being conjured was what it took to make it finally clear Ambrose and I were already too messy and strange to ever be anything else. What I had with Ben, instead, was neat and tidy, easy. I saw it now as we started across the parking lot, away from Jump Java, toward his car so he could go to work. It was the way we were reflected in the glass of the stationery store, his hand holding mine, how we walked in rhythm, not rushing or dragging, just right. Because of all those pictures, I knew just how we appeared. A good-looking boy, tall, with broad shoulders, in jeans and a jumbo smoothie polo shirt. A girl wearing a sundress and flip-flops, dark hair in a messy bun, sunglasses parked on her head. When the reflection stopped, it seemed odd to me that we didn't as well. "Of course I do," Jilly said, popping open another tube of sunscreen. "And we still have plenty of time." I watched her, skeptical, as she squeezed a dollop into her open palm. "It's already July 15th. You leave in a little over a month." "Exactly," she replied, pulling Bean, clothed in a swim diaper and a sun hat, closer to her. as she began to slather on the cream with one hand while keeping her in place with another, she added, "From the way you're talking, you'd think it was tomorrow." To this, I said nothing, watching as Bean squirmed in her grip. Ahead of us, some kid leaping into the pool did a cannonball, splashing water everywhere. "You are coming to my birthday dinner, though, right?" "Luna," she looked at me. "Of course. Why are you being so weird about this?"
"I'm not the one being weird," I told her, meaning it.
"I've been with Ben for 3 weeks, and you haven't even hung out with us once. I met Michael Salem, like, immediately."
"I know Ben,"
she said, finally unleashing Bean, who immediately started across the beach chair between us. "Remember, we went to school together?"
"You don't know him as my boyfriend."
"Is he really that different?" she asked. "And besides, with all those pictures he's tagging you in on YouMe, I basically feel like I'm hanging out with you guys anyway." Hearing this, I felt stung enough to sit back in my chair, busying myself with another coat of sunblock. I was just starting on my legs when Crawford, sitting fully clothed on Jilly's other side, reading a thick novel, said,
"She's right, you know. You are avoiding her."
Jilly sighed, adjusting her bathing suit straps as she sat back on her chair.
"Crawford, shut up. How can I be avoiding her? She's right here."
"Avoiding her with her boyfriend," he said in his flat, nasal tone, not looking up from the page in front of him. "You told her you guys had plans last night and couldn't do dinner, but you sat on the couch and watched TV all night."
Silence.
If shame was audible, however, Jilly's face would have been at high volume.
"Is that true?" I said finally. "You lied to me?"
"Yes," Crawford answered for her.
"No,"
she said at the same time, then sighed out loud, turning to face me.
"Okay, fine. Maybe I've been reluctant to embrace you with Ben, but it's only because I feel so awful about everything that happened."
"She wasn't working at the truck a couple of nights ago when you wanted to go bowling either," Crawford added from her other side. "She was just sitting around." Jilly whipped her head around to face him.
"Will you stop?"
"Sure," he said agreeably, turning a page as Bean, another bottle of sunscreen now in her grip, started over to his chair. I swallowed, still taken aback by what I'd just heard. Finally, I said,
"I don't get it. What do you feel so awful about that you don't even want to hang out with me?"
"I don't want to hang out with you and Ben," she corrected me.
"Is that different?"
"Yes," she said emphatically, her entire body heaving with the word. She sat back again, putting her hands to her face, then dropped them.
"Look, Luna, if I hadn't opened my big mouth about Ethan, you'd be with Ambrose. I screwed everything up for you. If I go out with you and Ben, it's like I think that's okay."
"I'm saying it's okay," I replied. "Also, you didn't screw anything up for me. Ambrose and I were never meant to be anything other than friends."
"See, I don't believe that, though," she said.
"Well, I do." I sat up, pulling my legs to my chest. "I've told you a million times you didn't do anything wrong by telling him about Ethan. You were just looking out for me."
"And I did it by giving him information he then threw back at you, scaring you off, and now you're with some other guy you barely even know."
"You were with Michael Salem after one night at a party."
"Because he's my true love. You barely even talk about Ben except when you're pressuring me to make it so you don't have to be alone with him."
"You guys are yelling," Crawford said. He was right. Jilly sat back, smoothing her suit. I cleared my throat. Another kid did a cannonball. Splash.
"Not every relationship," I said slowly after a moment, "is the hot, heavy love story. Some of them are just, you know, more mellow."
"Mellow," she repeated. "That's what all those Valentines and love songs are about for sure."
"Why do you care so much?" I demanded.
all you wanted was for me to be back out there. I'm out. I have a boyfriend.
You'll notice, she said, that you did not include Happy in that list.
Ben is a great guy. Not the same thing. I exhaled, frustrated.
You understand that most of the time I was with Ambrose, he was driving me nuts, right? That we are total opposites?
What I understand, she said quietly, is what I saw with my own eyes.
He might have made you crazy, but when you were with him, there was a spark. It wasn't ever just mellow.
Also, we were completely wrong for each other, I said. That's why it never would have worked out.
Maybe, she said, or maybe not. And it's that maybe that is killing me. Maybe I denied you what I have with Michael Salem. And sitting and watching you pretend you have it now with someone else? I just can't do it. I'm sorry.
Come on, I said now.
There was and is no chance for me and Ambrose. I haven't even seen him since that night, and I'm with Ben now. I'm sure he's moved on.
You can too, I promise.
Okay, fine. I'll try, she said.
Then she sighed, loudly, as Bean crawled back over to her, pulling up on the side of her chair.
And I'll go out with you and Ben if that's what you want.
It is, I replied, thinking how simple and easy this sounded. Just as quickly, I thought of Ambrose that first day we met, his own honest response.
I hate not getting what I want.
I wasn't what he wanted, though, not really. Just a fleeting thought for a moment, I was sure, despite what Jilly said. And I wanted Mellow. Or, at least, I'd take it.
Chapter 25. My mother was not one to apologize unless the situation truly warranted it. In the last 3 minutes, by my count, she'd told me she was sorry at least 5 times. It's just, she continued as I moved quickly around my room, finding my shoes and keys, once you've promised clowns, you can't really walk back from it.
It's fine, I told her again. Just tell me where they are.
On the I-15 off-ramp, apparently. They say you can't miss them as they're clowns, I finished for her.
Got it. I'm on my way.
I'm so sorry, she said again. If you can just get them here, that's all we need. Give Ben my apologies.
I'm not even meeting him until 7:30, I said, checking the clock just to be safe. It was 6:15.
I'll see you soon. I'll be the one with the car full of clowns.
Bless you. 10 minutes later, I was pulling up behind a broken-down blue polka-dotted microbus where 6 men in jumpsuits and wigs, sporting various versions of red noses and carrying water bottles, were milling around. I unlocked my doors, they jumped in, and we headed to the Amber Dashwood reception, which was slated to begin in mere minutes at the Derby Estate across town. When we pulled up in front, William was waiting.
"Oh, thank God," he said as they all exited, grabbing their bags of gear. "All right, everyone. Follow this path here around the patio area and await further instructions. We'll need you to greet arriving guests momentarily."
The clowns took off, adjusting rainbow wigs, big shoes, slapping the pavement. As we watched them go, I said, "I know it's crazy, but I kind of miss this job."
"That's crazy," he said, pulling out his phone and quickly typing a text. "But if you really mean it, feel free to stick around. I've got a whole group of performing dogs that need to behave during the past appetizers."
"Dogs? I thought you guys were joking about Ira."
"Oh, it's not Ira," he said. "This is a professional dog circus your mother had come in from Virginia. You should see the dancing schnauzers."
"Wow," I said. A couple of cars turned into the Derby Estate lot, driving slowly, obviously looking for spaces.
"Looks like you have some early birds."
"They probably didn't even wait until the vows were done," he grumbled, as one sedan parked, a couple in dress clothes climbing out.
I'll never understand people who are that desperate to get to a reception. Do they not get out much?
I smiled, having heard this many times before, as another car drove past us, finding a spot. Despite my time away, I could still feel it, that slow simmer of excitement slash dread in my stomach that always hit in the moments an event began. You just never knew how the night would go. William's phone beeped.
"Your mother is reporting surly bartenders," he reported after looking at the screen. "I guess it's time for my patented attitude adjustment."
"I'll pray for them," I told him as he straightened his tie.
"You just get out of here," he replied, giving me a quick kiss on the cheek. "Save yourself."
"Will do." As he disappeared down the path, though, I stayed where I was, watching as a few more guests arrived. Around the house, I could see tables set up with white cloths and flower arrangements that even from a distance I could tell had come from Kirby's. I wondered if Ambrose had gone to fetch them, maybe with Ira, and if Mrs. Kirby had asked about me. They'd get used to my absence soon enough, though, and probably Ambrose's as well. Summer was almost over. After Bee's wedding, he had his own life to get back to, wherever that would be.
"Excuse me," I heard someone say from behind me, "but is this the way to the Dashwood event?"
I turned, facing an older man in a dark suit and red tie. "Yes, it's around back." He peered down the path, as if not sure he believed me, then looked back at the lot as if reconsidering attending at all. Now that I noticed, there really wasn't clear signage.
"Why don't you follow me?" I told him. "This way."
Around back, I found my mother standing by the table assignments, lighting a candle. When she saw me, her eyes widened. "This gentleman is a guest?" I said, nodding at the man behind me. "The route isn't totally clear. You might want to have someone out front, just FYI."
"Oh, right," she said, smiling at the man as he approached her table.
"Ambrose, can you go around front and direct traffic?" Up until that second, I hadn't even seen him. Suddenly, though, there he was, in a blue dress shirt and navy tie, standing right in front of me. He looked as uncomfortable as I suddenly felt.
"Hi," I said, feeling like it was my job to start whatever conversation, hopefully minimal, that was necessary.
"Hey," he replied, then immediately looked at my mom. "You need me out front?"
"Just wave people in this general direction," my mom told him, lighting another candle, "and make sure Luna leaves. She's got a hot date."
At this, I felt my face flush. I hadn't told my mom or William anything about what had almost happened between me and Ambrose on the dance floor. What was the point? You don't start stories that have no middle or end, and this one barely had a beginning either. Just a couple of sentences, messy ones, trailing off into nothingness. Period.
"Right," Ambrose said, turning and starting up the path. "Come on, Luna. You don't want to keep your man waiting."
"That's the spirit," my mom called out, totally oblivious. "Have fun, honey."
Now even more uncomfortable, I kept my gaze focused on the back of Ambrose's shirt as I followed him up the path to the parking lot where, sure enough, a clump of guests were gathered, trying to decide if they were supposed to go through the main house, around, or some other route.
"Reception is this way, everyone,"
Ambrose called out, and like lemmings in formal wear, they all headed toward us.
"You'll find your table assignments just around back. Enjoy."
I stepped aside on the grass as one woman in a purple dress and squeaking shoes, clearly intent on hitting the appetizers first, barreled past me, her obviously embarrassed date following along behind. Soon everyone had followed, and it was just me and Ambrose again on the sidewalk as more cars pulled into the lot.
"I can stay a while if you need help," I said, feeling like I should offer, well, something.
I think I can handle pointing people in a certain direction, he replied, his voice cool. But thanks.
Just go, I told myself, as a couple with two little girls in stiff pink dresses began to head our way, their voices carrying above us. He doesn't want you here any more than you want to be. But then I thought again about the short time remaining before I departed for school and how everything already felt like it was wrapping up. Who knew when I'd have another chance to do the same with this? Look, Ambrose, I began after he'd waved the family to the path. I know this is awkward.
Awkward? He replied, shaking that curl out of his face. Why? Because I basically declared my undying love for you, and you walked away, never to be seen again until, well, now? How is that awkward?
This was a lot to hear at once, so it took me a second to unpack it. Finally, I said, you didn't declare your undying love. You asked me about Ethan.
I was working up to it, he replied. I had to apologize first. I was processing the information I'd just heard.
Ambrose.
It was a two-pronged approach, he continued. I didn't think you'd take off before I had a chance to finish.
Two-pronged? I said. You make it sound like a utensil.
Why didn't you tell me it wasn't a bad breakup you were reeling from? He demanded. I didn't know what I was up against. I had no idea what you needed.
It's not your job to give me what I need, I said, and...
Excuse me, is the reception in this building?
A man in a seersucker suit asked from behind us.
Around back,
Ambrose said immediately, jabbing a finger. The man, looking apologetic, scurried off. Don't take this out on the guests, I said. It's me you're mad at, remember?
But that's the thing, Luna. I'm not.
He sighed, shaking his head.
Look, I know this isn't the time or place for this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I liked you from the start, okay? That first day, my mom's wedding, when you grabbed me and dragged me inside, that was the beginning for me. It's why I asked you to dance. It's why I went out on the floor at that stupid party when Jughead was mauling you. It's why I did everything. The job, the bet, all of it. If I won, I was going to pick me for your next date, even if I was supposed to still be with someone else. I figured if there was no other way, then you'd have to give me a chance.
I blinked, trying to process this. But you were so into Lauren.
She was, is, great, he said. And we had a couple of great, epic nights together. But it was you I looked forward to seeing every day. You I wanted to hang out with even when this job was boring and stressful. I just didn't know how to tell you until that night at the dollar store when you said we were friends and you wanted me to be happy.
You knew we were friends, I said softly.
I hoped we were, he replied.
More cars were coming into the lot now, the bulk of the guests arriving.
When you said it, though, I saw a chance. Like an opening, big enough to wriggle through. That's what I told Jilly at the truck, that I'd been crazy about you all summer, but I knew you'd been hurt and wanted to be careful, to do things right. And she said it would be hard to compete with Ethan, for all kinds of reasons, so I should just be myself. I didn't get what she meant, so I asked her to explain.
Again, Ethan was there with us. It was like I could feel it. I loved him so much, I said. No one can ever understand what losing him was like.
That's the thing, though. He exhaled, looking down. I wasn't trying to get what it was about him. I just felt that finally, maybe, I was starting to understand you.
Oh, God. I thought, and just as suddenly felt a pang of pure fear, a reaction to this idea of opening myself up again to all the things that could then hurt me. Lightning didn't strike twice, except when it did. How could I allow myself back into that place of sunset walks and once and for all without expecting what had already followed? It was scarier than anything, except maybe not doing it at all.
"Excuse me, around back!" Ambrose hollered.